Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sean.
And you're Sean. And I'm Mango. And I don't have time to fuck up the intro this week. Even though I just said that we didn't have time, and then I sat here and I talked to Mango about the Rosharan system for probably about 5 or 6 minutes. I am a master at wasting time that I do not have. We are working our way through the story of the Cosmere, currently working on Edge Dancer, the first novella in the Stormlight Archive, taking place between books 2 and 3. Well, technically, I think this book right now is happening like at the end of book 2.
So, Mango, what happened last time?
Last time, we read an interlude that we were supposed to read about 6 months ago. No, it wasn't that long, but a couple months ago, we were supposed to do an interlude where we met the character of Lyft, who you don't like anymore.
Nope, don't like.
Because you found out Lyft is a kid.
Yeah.
And Lyft is an edge dancer. And she's bonded to a spren.
Stop making children heroes. They're already traumatized enough.
Yeah. You have no idea. And they were in Azamir, however you're supposed to say it. The Azish homeland at the palace as a new leader was being picked, because as it so happens, Zeth killed both of their last ones, and
one of them in like 3 days.
Yep, she had a run-in with Nail, who she knows as Darkness, the Herald of Justice.
Yeah,
who was there with a couple of his Skybreakers.
Yeah, she resurrected somebody.
Yes, she managed to escape them, but went back to save a poor thief that got killed in the kind of, or was brutally wounded at least, or mortally wounded at least, in the fight between her and the Skybreakers, or I guess more chase really than anything. But she went back, she used her powers as an edge dancer to heal him, and because of this, the Azish were like, holy shit, he came back from the dead, he's God, we're all good, the heralds bless this man, specifically Yezrian blesses this man. He's going to be our new leader. And Gox is the boy's name. And in turn, he pardons Lyft to Nail, because Nail needs to, like, he has this, something ain't right with the heralds. Those boys ain't right. He needs to justify his murders with some sort of law broken. We saw him do it with the other Radiant that he killed in an earlier prologue in Words of Radiance, where he said, you stole this thing 50 years ago. He needed to find a reason for them to die in the current legal system, not just because they are Radiants. And so after Gox pardoned Lyft, he no longer had a reason to kill her, and he left.
Mm-hmm.
And Lyft asked if she could eat Gox's dinner.
He's gonna find another reason to kill her later.
Maybe. What happens directly after that, but before this, is he meets Zeth. On the Shattered Plains. That is when that would happen. He would leave his encounter with Lyft in the prologue, go meet Zeth at the end of Words of Radiance, and now we're past that point. We're somewhere between the Everstorm has been summoned at this point, and, like, They're still exploring Urithiru. Like, Dalinar hasn't sworn, has bonded the Stormfather yet at this point. I have an image for you. This is just included in the short story collection, Arcanum Unbounded, which collects this novella, a novella from Mistborn, and a bunch of short stories. It has little cool art pieces for each of the stories, and this is the art piece for Edge Dancer. And in my little mini version of the book, this art is collected after the prologue, but before the beginning of chapter 1.
Oh, hey, that's a Shattered Plains.
It is not, actually. It kind of looks like it from here.
Wait a minute, that's not... It's radial, but it's not the same.
You will... we will learn about this place. This is the setting of Edge Dancer.
Oh, that's... Why is there multiple places that are shattered? This
one, you'll understand this one. This one's different.
Why?
You'll see. You'll see when we get to it.
Why and how is it different? Because this looks like the Shattered Plains, but not as big and not as symmetrical as it is radial.
And you can see Lift sliding down this hill and Windle kind of bouncing along next to her.
I don't know why that picture made me think, but Windle, except voiced by Eddie Murphy. Like Mushu.
It would be really good, actually. As
I'm it's now Spren! Think about Eddie Spren, Murphy, not right? Voidbringer. I don't do that yeah. killing people thing. Now I'm forever going to imagine.
Me too. Me too.
Voiced by you Eddie ruined Murphy. Windle for me.
Or you made Windle better. I don't know. Lift and Windle are the best comedic duo in the Cosmere, so I don't know. Chapter 1 begins with Lift prepared to be awesome. She sprinted across an open field in northern Tashik, a little more than a week's travel from Azamir. Mistress, Windle called, can't we please just go back? Nope. Lift becomes awesome and slides across the field, feeling free, until she hits a rock, tumbles through the air, slides across the ground on her face, and eventually stops when she hits a tree. Lift sat up, rubbing her face. Oh, Mistress, Windle said, can't we stop playing out here, please? We need to get back to Azamir. Go back, Lift stood up. We just escaped that place. Escaped? The palace, Mistress, you were an honored guest of the Emperor. You had everything you wanted, as much food, as much... All lies, she declared, hands on hips, to keep me from noticing the truth. They was going to eat me. Windle stammered. Mistress, humans do not eat other humans. You were a guest. Lift says that they were being too nice to her, and they must have wanted something. The obvious answer was that they were going to eat her. She begins to run again and thinks back to her time at the palace and how they kept trying to make her more refined, give her nicer clothing, and give her an education. It had started to consume her. If she'd stayed, how long would it have been before she wasn't Lift anymore? How long until she'd have been gobbled up, another girl left in her place? I will remember those who have been forgotten. Lift tried sliding across the ground on her feet again and ends up tumbling down to the ground. She couldn't figure out how she was supposed to stay standing when her feet were so slippery. She wishes she could just slide around on her knees, but thinks back to how Nail had spoken of the edge dancers of old, calling them elegant things of beauty. She set her jaw and stood up, taking off across the deserted field, running as fast as she could. She reached the top of a small hill, then jumped and coated her feet with power. She started slipping immediately. The air she pushed against when moving was holding her back. Lift coated her and her entire self in power. She sliced through the wind, turning sideways as she skidded down the side of the hill. Air slid off of her, as if it couldn't find her. Even the sunlight seemed to melt off her skin. She was between places, here but not. No air, no ground, just pure motion. Her skin started to glow, tendrils of smoky light rising from her. She laughed, reaching the bottom of the small hill. There she leaped some boulders and ran face first into another tree. Windle found her grinning like a fool, staring up at the sun. Windle says that Lift had been happy in the palace and that the Emperor would miss her. Lift tells him that she wrote Gox a note, which Windle calls BS on since she can't write. She said that she ate his dinner and that he'd know what that meant. Windle expresses his doubt, but she ignores him and continues to walk through the field. She'd run out of food already, so she shoves a handkerchief in her mouth instead and starts to chew on it. Mistress, Windle asked. My hab crubs on it, she said around the handkerchief. You shouldn't have been surge binding so much, and we should have stayed in the palace. Oh, how did this happen to me? I should be gardening right now. I had the most magnificent chairs. Chairs? Lift asked, pausing. Yes, chairs. While in Shadesmar, I had collected the most magnificent selection of the souls of chairs from your side. I cultivated them, grew them into grand crystals. I had some winstals, a nice showbear, quite the collection of spoonbacks, even a throne or two. You gardened chairs? Of course I gardened chairs. What else would I garden? Fwants? Plants? Well, we have them in Shadesmar, but I'm no pedestrian gardener. I'm an artiste. Why, I was planning on an entire exhibition of sofas when the ring chose me for this atrocious duty. Smoofdold Gramage Mragnifood. Would you take that out of your mouth? Lift did so. Now, what were you trying to say? Gibberish. I just wanted to see how you'd respond. She stuffed the other side of the handkerchief into her mouth and started sucking on it. They continue on, and Lift considers that Windle is a very strange Voidbringer. He had no interest in consuming souls, and she wondered if he perhaps was a vegetarian. They go through a small forest, and Lift thinks about how the tree branches wound around each other as they grow, to strengthen themselves against high storms. She thought most people did the same thing, but not Lift. She went on her own way. That was why she'd had to leave the palace. Is this about what happened to you? Windle asked. I don't know a lot about humans, but I believe it was natural, disconcerting though it might appear. You weren't wounded. Lift shaded her eyes and turned to look back the way they came. The wrong things were changing. She was supposed to stay the same, and the world was supposed to change around her. She'd asked for that, hadn't she? Had she been lied to? Are we going back? Wendell asked, hopeful. No, Lift said, just saying goodbye. Lift shoved her hands in her pockets and turned around before continuing through the trees. So it's a little obtuse right there, but I mean, she's talking about how she's supposed to stay the same, which is what she asked when she visited the Night Watcher.
So instead of staying like herself personality-wise, she just stays young.
Yes, except what freaked her out and what Wendell is alluding to is that she had her period.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah, it's he pretty much says, like, is this about what happened to you? I don't know a lot about humans, but I believe it was natural. Disconcerting though it might appear, you aren't wounded. And it's freaking her out because she's not supposed to age. So she's not, this was never supposed to happen to her. But something isn't going right from what she asked from the Night Watcher.
Huh.
That is the relevance of that. I wanted to make sure that you understood that, like, she was granted something, but it is not happening the way that it is supposed to. Or at least the way that she understood it was supposed to. Chapter 2. Lift arrives at Yadaw, a city that was cut out of the ground, which is the image that I sent you. It had been created with shard blades used to cut hundreds of trenches in the stone like a huge maze. The trenches seemed to be 2 or 3 stories deep. Large channels led out from the city so the water could escape during high storms. She approached a line of people waiting to enter the city. Lift mentions to Wendell that she should get herself a shard blade, since Nail tried to kill her with one, and that idea makes Wendell uncomfortable. She confronts him, saying that he knows something.
Yeah, I wouldn't want her to have a shard blade at age 12.
She confronts him, saying that he knows something, but he says that she has to discover it on her own. Lift threatens to bite him if he doesn't tell her, and he says nothing. He says that he's a gardener, not a soldier, and he won't have her hitting people with him. And she's like, what the fuck do you mean hitting people with you? And he goes quiet again. After a while, he talks about how something is wrong in the world, and he can feel it. He says that message from the Alethi was about the Everstorm, or the message about the from the Alethi about the Everstorm scared him. And Lift says that the Azish think that Dalinar was making it up. And Wendell, just interestingly, because it's important to like how everybody perceives Alethkar, Wendell refers to Dalinar as the de facto king of Alethkar. So not even the other countries
think that
see Alethkar as
king.
Yes. Lift acknowledges that she feels something coming as well and asks Wendell if his Voidbringer friends know anything. He says that he's a cultivation Spren and his people don't have a kingdom or cities like some of the other Spren. They only bonded Lift because the Cryptics and Honor Spren and some others were starting to move. Everyone who knew what to do died centuries ago. He says that the trauma of him transferring realms was lessened because of Lift's unique circumstances, and he wants them to return to Azamir. There isn't time to get back, Lift said. No, Wendell agreed. There probably isn't. At least we have shelter ahead. Yeah, assuming darkness doesn't kill us. Darkness? The Skybreaker who attacked you in the palace and came very close to murdering you? Yeah, he's in the city. Didn't you hear me complaining that I needed a shard blade? In the city. In Yadaw, where we are going right now. Yup. The Noodles have people watching for reports of him. A note came in right before we left saying he'd been spotted in Yadaw. Wait. Is that why we left all of a sudden? Is that why we're here? Did you come chasing that monster? Course not. That would be stupid. Which you are not. Nope. Then why are we here? They got these pancakes here, she said, with things cooked into them. It's supposed to be super tasty, and they eat them during the weeping. 10 varieties. I'm gonna steal one of each. You came all this way, leaving behind luxury, to eat some pancakes. Really awesome pancakes. Despite the fact that a deific shardbearer is here, a man who went to great lengths to try to execute you. He wanted to stop me from using my powers, Lift said. He's been seen other places. The Noodles looked into it. They're fascinated by him. Everyone pays attention to that bald guy who collects the heads of kings, but this guy has been murdering his way across Roshar, too. Little people. Quiet people. And we came here, why? She shrugged. Seemed like as good a place as any. As a point of fact, it most expressly is not as good a place as any. It is demonstrably worse for... You sure I can't eat you? She asked. That would be super convenient. You got a lot of extra vines. Maybe I could nibble on a few of those. I assure you, mistress, that you would find the experience thoroughly unappealing. Lift asks if she could use growth to grow plants to eat, and Wendell essentially says that growing the plants would take more energy than she would gain from eating them. Lift is hungry, though, and plans on stealing food from the guards. Wendel asks about the money that the Emperor gave her, and she says that she ditched it. She can't get robbed if she doesn't have any money. Besides, normal people didn't have that kind of money. So now you're normal. Of course I am. It's everyone else that's weird. Before he could reply, she ducked underneath the troll wagon in front of her and started sneaking toward the front of the line. And that is the end of the chapter. So darkness is here in the city. Nail. Chapter 3.
Yeah, this child is an absolute idiot. Don't like her.
Chapter 3 starts in Guard Captain Hawke's POV. This is the only POV in this book that is not Lyft's, and this is the only chapter not from her point of view. Guard Captain Hawke, who's a guard, one of the guard captains in the city of Yadaw, is inspecting a cart of grain. The man with the cart is obviously not a farmer, but an opportunist harvesting someone else's grain while the war in Emul and Tukar raged. They said strange rumors about the Tukari god priest. She consults with the deputy scribe, and they decide to let the badly needed grain in.
Wait, the what? The thief. The what?
The Tukari god priest.
Tukari? Is that a country?
Yes, Tukar. So Tukar and Emul are having a war. This was mentioned way back in Way of Kings, and I think it got mentioned again in Words of Radiance. But there's been war going on for like 80 years or something, and the Tukar leader has named himself the Tukari god priest.
That's...
We will hear more about them in Oathbringer.
Don't like that.
She consults with the deputy scribe, and they decide to let the badly needed grain in, but charge the thief triple tariff. Hawke notices the tarp on the man's wagon rustling and pulls it back to reveal Lyft buried in the grain and stuffing her mouth with uncooked grain. This stuff, the girl said in Azish, tastes terrible. I guess that's why we make stuff out of it first. She swallowed. Got anything to drink? The cartman freaks out over the dirty girl swimming in his grain, and Hawke tries to lure Lyft away with the promise of pancakes. The girl leaped from the grain. Hawke tried to snatch the child, but somehow the girl wiggled out of her grip. She leaped over Hawke's hands, then bounded forward and landed right on Hawke's shoulders. Hawke grunted at the sudden weight of the girl, who jumped off her shoulders and landed behind her. She dashed after the child, who entered into the guard chamber. Hawke stumbled up to the doorway, setting aside her spear and taking the club from her belt. The girl slid across the wooden floor as if it were covered in oil, passing right under the table where several scribes and two of Hawke's guards were eating. The girl then stood up and knocked the entire thing on its side, startling everyone backward and dumping food to the floor. Sorry, the girl called from the mess. Didn't mean to do that. Her head popped up from beside the overturned table, and she had a pancake sticking half out of her mouth. These aren't bad. Hawke's men leaped to their feet. Hawke lunged past them, her fingers brushed the arm of the girl, who wiggled away again. The child pushed against the floor and slid right between Rez's legs. Hawke lunged again, cornering the girl on the side of the guard chamber. The girl, in turn, reached up and wiggled through the room's single slot-like window. Hawke gaped. Surely that wasn't big enough for a person, even a small one, to get through so easily. She pressed herself against the wall, looking out the window. She didn't see anything at first, then the girl's head poked down from above. Hey, she said, what kind of pancake was that anyway? I've got to eat all 10. Get back in here, Hawke said, reaching through to try to grab the girl. You haven't been processed for immigration. The girl's head popped back upward, and her footsteps sounded on the roof. Hawke cursed and scrambled out the front, trailed by her two guards. They searched the roof of the small guard post, but saw nothing. She's back in here, one of the scribes called from inside. A moment later, the girl skidded out along the ground, a pancake in each hand and another in her mouth. She passed the guards and scrambled toward the cart with the smuggler. Hawke leaped to grab the child, and this time managed to get hold of her leg. Unfortunately, her two guards reached for the child too, and they tripped, falling in a jumbled mess right on top of Hawke. She hung on, though. Hawke clung tightly to the little girl's leg. The refugee girl sat on the stone in front of her, head cocked. She stuffed one of the pancakes into her mouth and reached behind herself, her hand darting toward the hitch where the cart was hooked to its chull. The hitch came undone, the hook popping out as the girl tapped it on the bottom. It didn't resist a bit. "Off me!" Hawke screamed, letting go of the girl and pushing free of the men. The cart rolled toward the ledge behind. Hawke leaped for the cart, seizing it by the side. It dragged her along with it, and she had terrible visions of it plummeting down over the ledge into the city, right on top of the refugees of the immigrant quarter. The cart, however, slowly lurched to a halt. Hawke looked up from where she stood. The girl was there, on top of the grain again, eating the last pancake. They really are good. Tuck cake, Hawke said, feeling exhausted. You eat them for prosperity in the year to come. People should eat them all the time then, you know? Maybe. The girl nodded, then stood to the side and kicked open the tailgate of the cart. In a rush, the grain slid out of the cart. It was the strangest thing she'd ever seen. The pile of grain became like liquid, flowing out of the cart even though the incline was shallow. It glowed softly as it flowed out and rained down into the city. The girl smiled at Hawke, then she jumped off after it. Hawke gaped as the girl fell after the grain. The two other guards finally woke up enough to come help. The smuggler was screaming. Below, the grain billowed in the air, sending up dust as it poured into the immigrant quarter. It was rather far down, but Hawke was pretty sure she heard shouts of delight and praise as the food blanketed the people there. Hawke stepped up to the ledge. The girl was nowhere to be seen. Hawke searched again but saw nothing, though there was this strange black dust at her feet. It blew away in the wind. Captain, Rez asked. Take over immigration for the next hour, Rez. I need a break. Storms. How on Roshar was she ever going to explain this in a report? That's the end of the chapter. Chapter 4. Lift wasn't supposed to be able to touch Wendell. The Voidbringer kept saying things like, I don't have enough presence in this realm, even with our bond, and you must be stuck partially in the cognitive. Gibberish, basically, because she could touch him. That was very useful at times. Times like when you just jumped off a short cliff and needed something to hold on to. Lift grabbed a hold of him like a rope. It wasn't much, but it did help slow her descent. She hit harder than she would have been safe for most people. Fortunately, she was awesome. She extinguished the glow of her awesomeness, then dashed to a small alleyway. People crowded around behind her, praising various heralds and gods for the gift of the grain. In minutes, all that was left of an entire cartload of grain was a few husks blowing in the wind. Lift settled in the alleyway's mouth, inspecting her surroundings. It was like she'd dropped from noonday straight into dusk. Long shadows everywhere, and things smelled wet. The buildings were cut right into the stone. They painted the walls these bright colors, often in columns, to differentiate one building from another. People swarmed all about. This was the good kind of life. Lift liked being on the move, but she didn't like being alone. Solitary was different from alone. She stood up and started walking. That was quite generous of you, mistress, Wendell said, dumping that grain, after hearing that the man who had it was a thief. That, Lift said. I just wanted something soft to land on if you were snoozing. She remembered that the guards had called this district the immigrant district. She wouldn't stick out here among all the refugees. She notices that unlike most places in the world, the cavern walls had gave protection enough from high storm winds for shanties to be built. She also notes that every building is built 4 feet off the ground for when the high storm rain comes in. Wendell asks what the next part of her plan is, and she says that they need to find more food. I can't believe this, Wendell said. I cannot believe this is my existence. I was a gardener, respected. Now everywhere I go, people look at us as if we're going to pick their pockets. Did you know we were considering bonding this nice cobbler man instead of you? A very kindly man who took care of children. I could have lived quietly, helping him making shoes. I could have done an entire display of shoes.
Yeah, well, it's too bad that Nail killed him, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. I was wondering if you were going to pick
up on
that.
Too bad.
Nail did kill that guy. Now, the interesting thing here, and it kind of shows that there isn't, like, the Radiant Orders aren't hard rules as to who can be what kind of Radiant. That person, Yim was his name, he was going to be a Truth Watcher. The Spren that is described in that chapter is the Truth Watcher Spren, not a Edge Dancer Spren. So both the Truth Watchers and the Edge Dancers both considered him a good candidate for their orders. Lift asks what he could have done against the danger, bonded to a shoemaker, and Wendell says that Radiants need shoes too. Wendell is despondent that Lift will end up slamming him into people and using him as a weapon. This confuses Lift, and he says that he has to get her to say the words, that it's his job. He often said things like this. He probably had to be messed up in the brain to be a Voidbringer, so she didn't hold it against him. Lift pulls out a book that she stole from the guard post, intending to sell it, and Wendell looks at it since she can't read. A strange little kremlin crawled up the wall beside her. Smaller than most, it was black with a thin carapace and a strip of fuzzy brown on its back that seemed spongy. Wendell says the book is worthless because it is just a logbook for the hours the guards are on duty. Lift says that people buy books, and Wendell points out that the content of the book is what gives it value. He wishes she'd listen to the teachers in Aesir. Stupid book, and stupid people. She grumbled and tossed the book over her shoulder. It hit a woman carrying a basket of yarn. She yelped. You, a voice shouted. Lift winced. A man in a guard's uniform was pointing at her through the crowd. Did you just assault that woman? The guard shouted at her. Barely, Lift shouted back. The guard came stalking toward her. Run? Wendell asked. Run. She ducked into an alley, prompting further shots from the guard, who came barreling in after her. And that's the end of the chapter.
Oh no, I accidentally threw something that hurt someone. I did it on purpose, obviously.
I just like, did you assault that woman? Barely.
Not on purpose.
Like, technically, yes, but barely.
Not on purpose.
Yeah. Chapter
then
5.
Then again, I didn't run into that person with my car and kill them on purpose. I mean, very different, but It wasn't on purpose.
Chapter 5. Roughly a half hour later, Lyft swung idly on a tarp in a shanty alleyway. I will remember those who have been forgotten. She'd sworn that oath as she'd saved Gox's life. The right words, important words. But what did they mean? What about her mother? Nobody remembered her. There seemed far too many people out there who were being forgotten. Too many for one girl to remember. Wendell asks why Lyft has never gone back to the Reshi Isles, where she's from, and she doesn't answer. Do you know why we had to leave Azir? Lyft said softly. To chase after that Skybreaker, the one you call Darkness. No, we're not doing that. Sure. We left because people started to know who I am. If you stay in the same place too long, then people start to recognize you. The shopkeepers learn your name. They smile at you when you enter and already know what to get for you because they remember what you need. That's a bad thing? She nodded, still staring at the sky. It's worse when they think they're your friend. Gox, the Viziers, they make assumptions. They think they know you, then start to expect things of you. Then you have to be the person everyone thinks you are, not the person you actually are. And who is the person you actually are, Lyft? She'd known that once, hadn't she? Or was it just that she'd been young enough not to care? How did people know? The pangs of a growling stomach interrupted her. She sighed and stood up on the tarp. Come on, she said. Let's go find some urchins. And that's the end of chapter 5. Chapter 6. Lyft talks to a couple of urchins and finds out she can get some food from Tashi's Light Orphanage. She arrives and knocks on the door in the alley near a small amphitheater. She's told to wait, food comes later. Lyft settles down near where some old people were chatting and watches as a woman brings a large child to the doorstep of the orphanage, hugs him, then leaves. He just sat there, staring. Not a baby in a basket, no. That was a children's tale. This was what actually happened at orphanages. People left children who were too big to keep caring for but couldn't take care of themselves or contribute to the family. Wendell is horrified by the sight, and Lyft's heart twists as she wants to look away, but can't. She walks over to the boy instead. She hated how rich people made a romantic dream of what an orphanage was like. The truth was, they were filled with kids like this. Kids who were tough to care for or required constant watching, or who had mental disabilities. Sometimes, kids who would get violent. She sat down next to the boy. She was smaller than he was. Hey, she said. He looked to her with glazed eyes. She could see his wound better now. The hair hadn't grown back on the side of his head. It's going to be all right, she said, taking his hand in hers. He didn't reply. Later, a woman stepped out of the orphanage and looked at the two kids. She says that the boy is faking his wound and won't last long in the orphanage, but lets him inside. Lyft tries to follow, but the woman stops her and tells her that she'll give Lyft 3 meals and Lyft can choose when she gets them. Lyft asks for some place to sleep, and the woman points her towards some benches. The woman enters the orphanage with the wounded boy, and another boy appears to give Lyft some bread. Don't suppose you have a pancake? Lyft asked. I've got a goal to eat. He shut the door. Lyft sighed, but settled down on the stone benches near some old men and started gobbling it up. Storming witch, she muttered. Don't judge her too harshly, child, said one of the old men on the benches. He wore a black shika, but had pulled back the part that wrapped the face, exposing a gray mustache and eyebrows. He had dark brown skin with a wide smile.
I'm sorry, what is a shika besides it's, Zelda? It's like a,
yeah, it's like, let me see if I can find, like,
I do not know what a shika is for anything besides Zelda.
Yeah, it's like, it kind of looks like a hijab. Here's like a drawing of somebody wearing a shika. It is difficult to be the one that handles everyone else's problems. She doesn't have to be so mean. When she isn't, then children congregate here begging for handouts. So, isn't that kind of the point of an orphanage? Lyft chewed on the roll. Sleep on the rock benches. I should go steal her pillow. I think you'd find her ready to deal with feisty urchin thieves. I really cannot give this guy's Hoid's voice. Hoid's voice? He's not Hoid. But for some reason, I'm wanting to.
Don't.
She ain't never faced me before. I'm awesome. The man laughed. They call her the Stump, because she won't be blown by any storm. I don't think you'll get the best of her, little one. He leaned in. But I have information, if you are interested in a trade. Lyft rolled her eyes. Ain't got nothing left to trade. trade me your time then. I will tell you how to get on the stump's good side, maybe earn yourself a bed. In turn, you answer a question for me. Is this a deal? Lift cocked an eyebrow at him. Sure, whatever. Here is my secret. The stump has a little hobby. She is in the business of trading spheres, an exchanging business, so to speak. Find someone who wants to trade with her, and she will handsomely reward you. Trade spheres, Lift said. Money for money? What's the point of that? He shrugged. She works hard to cover it up, so it must be important. What a lame secret. Will you still answer my question? Depends on how lame it is. What body part do you feel that you are most like? He asked. Are you the hand, always busy doing work? Are you the mind, giving direction? Do you feel that you are more of a leg, perhaps? Bearing up everyone else and rarely noticed?
She's a stomach.
Yeah. Yeah, lame question. No, it is of most importance. Each person, they are but a piece of something larger, some grand
this
organism
sounds
that makes
like
up this city.
Wit.
It does, it's not,
this
I promise.
This sounds like Hoid.
It does, but it's not, I promise. This is the philosophy I am building, you see. Lift eyed him. Great. Angry twig running an orphanage, weird old man outside it. She dusted off her hands. If I'm anything, I'm a nose, because I'm filled with all kinds of weird crud, and you never know what's going to fall out. Ah, interesting. That wasn't meant to be helpful. Yes, but it was honest, which is the cornerstone of good philosophy. Yeah, sure. Lift hopped off the stone benches. As fun as it was talking crazy stuff with you, I got somewhere important to be. You do? Windel asked. Yup, Lift said. I've got an appointment. And that's the end of the chapter. Chapter 7. Lift goes towards her appointment, and Windel asks if she was going to get spheres to get on the stump's good side. Lift says that it's probably a laundering scheme for criminals, or she's guilting people into giving her donations of infused spheres, and then she's trading them to make a small profit. Lift goes back to the guardhouse, and follows Hawke to her home.
She goes back to the garden hose.
The garden hose, yes. She uses Windel to climb up to the roof, then settles in for the night. She tells him to watch if anyone goes in the building. He wakes her up later, calling her an idiot. Windel says that darkness just entered the building, and realizes that Lift had come to the city to find him. She'd shown off her powers to the guard captain, knowing it would draw out darkness. Lift says that darkness is looking for somebody in the city, somebody with powers like her. Windel understands and helps lower her down to the window so she can eavesdrop. The guard captain is confused by Nail's appearance and explains the situation from the city gates with Lift to him. Nail says that it isn't the guard's fault, that she came into contact with a force she cannot understand. He asks her if Lift glowed. She explains what Lift did with the grain, and Nail gives her something to sign. He tells her that she doesn't need to know any more details and orders her to keep an eye out for Lift. Nail hesitates, noting that some of the spheres in the woman's home were done. He asks her about them, and she says that they had run out of light weeks ago. He leaves. Lift watches from the roof as Nail walks away from the building. So we found him, Windel whispered. Now what? Now? Lift swallowed. Now we follow him. And that's the end of chapter 7. I love when Nail is on screen talking to somebody that doesn't know that he's Nail, and he's like, why don't your spheres have any light in them? Because you can tell he's thinking, did you absorb the stormlight? Do I have to kill your ass? Like,
do I have to find a reason to kill your ass?
Yeah, do I need to fucking spy on you and come up with some bullshit law you broke in 1973 so I can put a cap in your ass? Like, what the fuck? Chapter 8. Lift follows darkness to a public market where she grabs a fruit. The shopkeeper yells about a thief, and Lift thinks she's been caught, but it was a different girl. The girl bolted from the cart and ran right into Nail. Darkness snatched the young woman from the crowd. She struggled, battering against him. Still holding to her, he bent and picked up the basket of fruit, then carried it toward the shop, dragging the thief after him. Thank you, the shopkeeper said. Officer? I am a special deputized operative, granted free jurisdiction throughout the kingdom by the prince, Darkness said. The girl grabbed a piece of fruit from the basket and threw it at Darkness.
Or I guess he's not the prince, is he?
No. So Azamir rules over these kind of... rules in quotation marks over a collection of kingdoms, but this place has its own prince that is technically in charge, but they still will listen to the emperor of Azamir.
Wait, who is the person she resurrected?
Gox is the emperor of Azamir now.
Oh.
So technically the people of this land will listen to him, but they do have their own prince that will sometimes like be like, no, fuck you, I'm gonna do my own thing. So Nail has this thief lady, thief girl, and he's grabbed her. And the shopkeeper is thanking him. I am a special deputized operative granted free jurisdiction throughout the kingdom by the prince, Darkness said.
That's a fancy way of saying I do what I want.
Yeah, it's a fancy way of saying, fuck you, I'm a herald. The girl grabbed a piece of fruit from the basket and threw it at Darkness. The girl in his grip cringed before him, then seemed to panic, reaching to her belt, yanking out her knife and brandishing it. She tried a desperate swing at Darkness's arm, but he easily slapped the weapon away with his empty hand. Around them, the crowd had sensed that something was off. As if in response to this, Darkness summoned his shard blade and rammed it through the struggling girl's chest. She gasped, eyes going wide, then shriveling and burning out, letting twin trails of smoke creep toward the sky. The shopkeeper screamed, hand to his chest. Lift squeezed her eyes closed. She heard the corpse drop to the ground and Darkness's too calm voice as he said, "Give this form to the Market Watch, who will dispose of the body and take your statement. Let me witness the time and date. Here." Lift forced her eyes open. Darkness finished filling out the form, then prodded the shopkeeper, forcing the man to witness it as well in pen and write a short description of what happened. He will murder somebody, but he'll make sure that he gets a damn good police report afterwards. That done, Darkness nodded and turned to go. The shopkeeper stared at the corpse, papers held limply in his fingers. "Was that necessary?" he demanded. "Tashi. Tashi above." "Tashi doesn't care much for what you do here," Darkness said as he walked away. "In fact, I'd pray that he doesn't reach your city, as I doubt you'd like the consequences. As for the thief, she would have enjoyed imprisonment for her theft. The punishment prescribed for assaulting an officer with a bladed weapon, however, is death." But that was barbaric. Couldn't you have just taken off her hand or something?" Darkness stopped, then looked back at the shopkeeper, who cringed. "I have tried that, where the law allows discretion in punishments. Removing a hand leads to a high rate of recidivism, as the thief is left unable to do most honest work, and therefore must steal. In such a case, I could make crime worse instead of reducing it." He cocked his head, looking from the shopkeeper to the corpse, as if confused why anyone would be bothered by what he had done. Without further concern for the matter, he turned and continued on his way. Lift tried to force Stormlight into the girl, but it doesn't work. Windle says that too much time has passed and that since the girl was killed by a shard blade, it was different from what happened with Gox. He, however, does imply that if Lift had tried literally right after the girl had been hit by the shard blade, she could have possibly done something.
She could have done something.
What is being implied here and what you'll see throughout...
Why is he telling her, you could have used your powers to save her?
Yeah, what is being implied here, because it's important, is that even a immediately fatal wound can be healed by Stormlight if you have Stormlight right when it happens. Like, you could, like, it's if you're on it, you can get saved from a shard blade wound, but if you're not, it's fucking over.
Too bad.
Lift grew angry and ran after Darkness, determined to follow him. Her name was Tika, Lift thought. I will remember you, Tika, because few others will. While they follow, Windle warns Lift that Darkness has eyes she cannot see. They go into a better part of town. Light from the rising sun sparkled off painted sections of the walls, here displaying a grand mural of Tashi and the Nine binding the world. So, the shopkeeper also, like, said a prayer to Tashi or whatever, and Darkness said, "Tashi doesn't care much for what you do here. In fact, I pray that he doesn't reach your city, as I doubt you'd like the consequences." Tashi and the Nine are Ishar and the other Nine Heralds, is what this religion refers to them as. So Nail was essentially saying, hey, Ishar doesn't care what's happening here, and you had to pray that he doesn't get here because you wouldn't like what happened if Ishar comes here. There's also talk earlier on of Raylisi, who is like a boogeyman, like god that these people fear.
What's the boogeyman?
It's race, Raylisi, race, odium.
Oh.
It's their name for odium.
So it was the boogeyman.
Yes. Lift follows Nail as he enters a building. "What are these eyes you say he has?" she asked as Windle wound up beside her. "The ones I can't see." He will have a spren, like me. It's likely invisible to you and anyone else but him. Most are on this side, I think. I don't remember all the rules. You sure are dumb some of the time, Voidbringer, he sighed. Don't worry, I'm dumb most of the time. You might be stupid, but I can say with certainty that you're not a match for that creature. There are many words you haven't spoken. We have to get in there and see what he's up to. Mistress, please don't get yourself killed. It would be traumatic. Why, I think it would take me months and months to get over it. That's faster than I'd get over it. She tried to come up with a plan, desiring to do more than just listen. She wanted to get inside the building. She used growth to make a small tree grow, then climbed up its branches to one of the building's windows and directed vines to grow inside the window and force it open. She slipped into a box-like stone room. Mistress! Oh, mistress, that was delightful! Why don't we forget this entire mess with the Skybreakers and go... Why go run a farm? Yes, a farm, a lovely farm. You could sculpt plants every day and eat until you were ready to burst and... Mistress? Lift padded through the room. She peeked out into a dark hallway, listening. Lift sees a guard watching the entrance to the building, and she slips down another path and ducks into a room. She looked around but found nothing of use. Finally, she caught a scent and followed it to where Nail's breakfast had been left for him. Mission accomplished. She started stuffing her face with a vengeful enthusiasm. Mistress, was this all so you could steal his food? Yep, Lift said, then swallowed. Of course it is. She took another bite. That'd show him. Oh, of course. I suppose this is pleasant, then. Yes, no swinging about of innocent spren, stabbing them into people and the like. Just stealing some food. Darkness is food. She ate every scrap, then settled back against the wall, smiling. So we came all this way and tracked the most dangerous man we've ever met, merely so you could steal his breakfast? We didn't come here to do anything more, then? Do you want to do something more? Storms, no. I mean, every moment we spend in here is dangerous. Yup. We should run. Go found a farm, like I said. Leave him behind, though he's likely tracking someone in the city. Someone like us. Someone who can't fight him. Someone he will murder before they even start to grasp their powers. They sat in the room, empty tray beside them. Lift felt her awesomeness begin to stir within her again. So, she asked. Guess we go spy on him, huh? Window whimpered, but shockingly, nodded. That's the end of chapter 8. Chapter 9. Just try not to die too violently, mistress, Windle said as she crept closer to the sounds
not
of people
talking.
Not too
violently.
Yeah, a nice rap on the head rather than a disemboweling. I hear that suffocation is nice, though in such a case, don't look at me as you expire. I'm not sure I could handle it. I'm not sure about falling to your death. Seems like it might be messy, but at the same time, at least there wouldn't be any stabbing. The hallway ended in a large chamber lit by diamonds. Lift crouched by the half-open door, hidden in shadows. Darkness paced before two underlings in uniforms of black and white. Your excuses do not befit those who would join our order, Darkness was saying. If you were to earn the trust of your spren and take the step from initiate to shardbearer, you must dedicate yourself. You must prove your worth. Earlier today, I followed a lead that each of you missed and have discovered a second offender in the city. Sir, Ereshi woman said, I prevented an assault in an alleyway. A man was being accosted by thugs. While this is well, we must be careful not to be distracted by petty crimes. I realize that it can be difficult to remain focused when confronted by a fracture of the codes that bind society. Remember that greater matters and greater crimes must be our primary concern. Surgebinders, the woman said. But, said a male initiate, is it really... I mean, shouldn't we want them to return so we won't be the only Order of Knights Radiant? Unfortunately, no. I once thought as you, but Ishar made the truth clear to me. If the bonds between men and spren are reignited, then men will naturally discover the greater power of the oaths. Without honor to regulate this, there is a small chance that what comes next will allow the Voidbringers to again make the jump between worlds. That would cause a desolation, and even a small chance that the world will be destroyed is a risk that we cannot take. Absolute fidelity to the mission Ishar gave us, the greater law of protecting Roshar, is required. You're wrong, a voice whispered from the darkness. You may be a god, but you're still wrong. Lift nearly jumped clear out of her skin. There was a guy sitting just inside the doorway, right next to where she was hiding. She hadn't seen him. He sat on the floor wearing tattered white clothing. His hair was short, a brown fuzz as if he'd kept it shaved until recently. He had pale, ghostly skin and held a long sword in a silvery sheath.
Oh, hi,
Zed. He held his arms draped around the sheath as if it were a child's toy to hug. He shifted in his place, and he left a soft, white afterimage behind him, like you get when staring at a bright gemstone for too long. It faded away in a moment. So Sanderson has commented on this, and he makes it more clear later in the books, but I'm just going to bring it up now so you know what's up. Zeth's body and soul weren't properly realigned when Nail brought him back. And so Zeth, when he moves, now leaves an after image, which is his soul catching up to his body.
That is freaking awesome.
It's implied that the only reason that that Lyft can see it is because she, like Wendell said, is possibly existing half in the cognitive realm. Something is wrong with her.
Okay, but so that's, she is seeing, that's still really cool.
It's badass.
That's
but
really
that's what's
cool.
Happening. Yeah.
Hey, Brandon, thank you. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he just made that up just so he could have a really cool effect for his character, but still, that's really cool.
It's very cool.
The rule of cool comes first, and then making up an excuse for it comes after.
And I'm not going to lie, everything that I know about how Cosmere works, I think this tracks. I think I know what's happening here, but it requires a little bit more explanation from other stuff. They're already back, he whispered.
Cool.
Yeah, it's just cool. I didn't really care. I later on I thought about it and I was like, oh, actually, you know what? It's not just cool. It makes sense. You know?
Well, yeah, it makes sense even now. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Not even from like a, he has to explain it. Just like yeah, okay.
I believe it. The soul isn't stapled back to the body perfectly, so it kind of lags behind.
Literally, in any story ever that includes like the resurrection of a character, that could be feasible. Yeah. And it honestly wouldn't even have to be explained that much.
It scares me as to Zeth's future, though, because part of me is like, you brought him back, but he's not right. So, like, what does that mean? Is this one of those things where it's like, with, you know, like with the return, they're brought back so they can die at another moment, you know?
I'm like, Zeth, I like Zeth too much.
They're already back, he whispered. The Voidbringers have already returned. You are mistaken, Darkness said. The Voidbringers are not back. What you saw on the Shattered Plains are simply remnants from millennia ago. Voidbringers who have been hiding among us all this time. The man in white looked up, and Lyft shied away. His movement left another afterimage that glowed briefly before fading. White clothing, strange powers, Shin Man with a bald head, shard blade. This was the Starven assassin in white.
Yep.
I saw them return, the assassin whispered. The new storm, the red eyes. You are wrong, Nin Sun God. You are wrong. A fluke, Darkness said. I contacted Ishar, and he assured me it is so. What you saw are a few listeners who remain from the old ways, ones free to use the old forms. They summoned a cluster of void spren. We found remnants of them on Roshar before, hiding. The storm, the new storm of red lightning. It means nothing. An oddity to be sure. You're wrong. So wrong.
They're both right and they're both wrong. And we know that.
Yes. Yes.
We know that they're both right and they're both wrong.
But what is important here is Nail being like, being so unable to accept the truth and the fact that he went to another herald, Ishar, and the other herald was like, nah, dude, I got the perfect explanation for what's happening. This is what's happening. And
they're in
Nail
denial.
Believing
they
it.
Don't want yes, to they don't denial. They don't want to believe that stuff is coming back.
You should keep an eye on it, the name Ishar as well, because when we were talking a while ago about when Nail and Kalak were seen in Yasna's prologue, they mentioned that some of the information they've been given as well is coming from Ishar. So these people, these heralds, really look up to Ishar as a source of, like, wisdom and guidance.
Ishar, you should stop teaching people how to gaslight people. That's not cool, dude.
The Voidbringers have not returned, Darkness said firmly. Ishar has promised it, and he will not lie. We must do our duty. You are questioning, Zeth's son Naturo. This is not good. This is weakness. To question is to accept a descent into inactivity. The only path to sanity and action is to choose a code and to follow it. This is why I came to you in the first place. Darkness turned, striding past the others. The minds of men are fragile, their emotions mutable and often unpredictable. The only path to honor is to stick to your chosen code. This is the way, or this was the way of the Knights Radiant, and it is the way of the Skybreakers. The man and woman standing nearby both saluted. The assassin just bowed his head again, closing his eyes. You said that there is a second Surgebinder in the city, the woman said. We can find... She is mine, Darkness said evenly. You will continue your mission. Find the one who has been hiding here since we arrived. He narrowed his eyes. If we don't stop one, others will congregate. They clump together. I have often found them making contact with one another these last 5 years, if I leave them alone. They must be drawn to each other. He turned toward his two initiates. He seemed to ignore the assassin except when spoken to. Your quarry will make mistakes. They will break the law. The other orders always did consider themselves beyond the reach of the law. Only the Skybreakers ever understood the importance of boundaries, of picking something external to yourself and using it as a guide. Your minds cannot be trusted. Even my mind, especially my mind, cannot be trusted. I have given you enough help.
Yeah,
you have
right.
my blessing.
Your mind can't be trusted because you're going crazy.
You have my blessing and you have our commission granting us authority to act in this city. You will find the Surgebinder, you will discover their sins, and you will bring them judgment in the name of all Roshar. The two saluted again and the room suddenly darkened. The woman began glowing with a phantom light and she blushed, looking sheepishly towards darkness. I'll find them, sir. I have an investigation in progress. I have a lead too, the man said. I'll have the information by tonight for certain. Work together, Darkness said. This is not a competition. It is a test to measure competence. I'm giving you until sunset, but after that I can wait no longer. Now that others have begun arriving, the risk is too great. At sunset, I will deal with the issue myself. Lift moved away from the group of the people, then went back out the window that she had entered through. She ducked into an alleyway and sat down against one of the walls. She was confused by everything she'd seen. The other people had glowed like she could. She worried that Zeth would go and kill Gox. Mistress, Wendell said. Oh, mistress, did you hear what they called him? Nin? That's a name of Nalan, the herald. That can't be true. They went away, didn't they? Even we have legends about that. If that creature is truly one of them, oh, Lift, what are we going to do? I don't know, she whispered. I don't know. Storms, why am I even here? I believe I've been asking that since... Shut it, Voidbringer. Lift sighed and went wandering back toward the immigrant quarter, and that is the end of Chapter 9. Chapter 10. When Lift returns to the orphanage, she finds the stump has opened the doors and let the kids out to play. The group of old men and women from the day before had gathered and were watching the children play. Lift gets in line with the kids for food, and Stump gives her the second of three meals. She sat apart from the other kids and began to eat it. Window questions her on why she left Azier again. He says that she'd liked the clothing and had enjoyed messing with the teachers they tried to assign to her. Maybe, Lift said. I just didn't want people expecting so much from me. If you get to know people too long, they'll start depending on you. Oh, and you can't bear responsibility? Of course I can't. I'm a starving street urchin. One who came here chasing down what appears to be one of the heralds themselves, gone mad and accompanied by an assassin who has murdered multiple world monarchs. Yes, I believe that you must be avoiding responsibility. You giving me lip, Voidbringer? I think so. Honestly, I don't know what that term means, but judging by your tone, I'd say that I'm probably giving you lip, and you probably deserve it. Mama always told me to travel, Lift said, and go places, while I'm young. And that's why you left the palace? Don't know. Maybe. Utter nonsense. Mistress, what is it really? Lift, what do you want? Everything is changing, she said softly. That's okay, stuff changes. It's just that I'm not supposed to. I asked not to. She's supposed to give you what you ask. The Night Watcher, Wendell asked. Lift nodded, feeling small, cold. It was obvious to her, though she'd tried ignoring it for years, that she was taller than she'd been when she first sought out the old magic 3 years ago. The only thing I've ever known how to do was hunt food. What's that, mistress? It had been hard at first, feeding herself. Over time, she'd figured out the tricks. She'd gotten good at it. But once you weren't hungry at all the time, what did you do? How did you know? The boy that had been dropped off the day before came up to Lift and sat beside her. She gave him the rest of her half-eaten roll. He asks when his mother is coming back. She says that his mother probably isn't coming and asks what his name is. He says it's Mick and asks if they're friends. Lift says that he doesn't want to be her friend, as her friends end up as emperors. The stump comes over and asks Lift and Mick if they're planning how to rob her. She reminds Lift that there's only one meal left and tells her to take Mick when she goes. The stump says that she's faking, that she can see through, that he's faking, that she can see through urchins that feign an illness to get food, and walks away. Mick says that he misses his mother, and Lift tells him that at least they get to remember their mothers. Most kids like them didn't even get that. A short time later, the stump called that playtime was over and the kids all went back into the orphanage. Lift remained in her seat on the stone, then smacked her hand at a kremling that had been inching across the step nearby. Starving thing dodged, then clicked its chitin legs as if laughing. They sure did have strange kremlings here. Wendell asks what they're going to do, and Lift is struck by indecision. She sits there as the old people also leave until just the man she had spoken to the day before remained. Hey, Lift called to him. You still creepy, old man? I am the man I was made to be, he said back. Lift walked over to him. How do you know what to do? She asked the man. About what, little one? About everything. Who tells you how to decide what to do with your time? Was it your parents who showed you? What's the secret? The secret to what? To being human. That, I don't think I know. At least not better than you do. It is strange, the man said. People get such a small amount of time. So many I've known say it. As soon as you feel you're getting a handle on things, the day is done. The night falls and the light goes out. Lift looked at him. Yep, still creepy. I guess when you're old and stuff, you get to thinking about being dead. Kind of like when a fella's got a piss, he starts thinking about finding a convenient alleyway. The man chuckled. Your life may pass, but the organism that is the city will continue on, little nose. I'm not a nose. I was being cheeky. Nose, cheek, both are on the face. Lift rolled her eyes. That's not what I meant either. What are you then? An ear, perhaps? Don't know. Maybe. No, not yet, but close. Right. And what are you? I change, moment by moment. One moment I am the eyes that inspect so many people in this city. Another moment I am the mouth, to speak the words of philosophy. They spread like a disease, and so at times I am the disease. Most diseases live. Did you know that? You're not really talking about what you're talking about, are you? Lift said. I believe that I am. Great. She turned to go. What will you make for this city, child? The man asked. That is part of my question. Do you choose, or are you simply molded by the greater good? And are you, as a city, a district of grand palaces, or are you a slum unto yourself? If you could see inside me, you wouldn't say things like that. Because, at least slums know what they was built for. She turned and joined the flow of people on the street. And that's the end of chapter 10. Chapter 11. I don't think you understand how this is supposed to work, Wendell said. Mistress, you don't seem interested in involving our relationship. She shrugged. There are words, Wendell said. That's what we call them, at least. They're more ideas, living ideas, with power. You have to let them into your soul. Let me into your soul. You heard those skybreakers, right? They're looking to take the next step in their training. That's when, you know, they get a shard blade. There's only one thing I know how to do, Lift said, and that's steal darkness's lunch, like I came to do in the first place. And, didn't we do that already? Not his food, his lunch. She narrowed her eyes. Ah, Wendell said. The person he's planning to execute. We're going to snatch them away from him. Lift walked along a side street where vines grew over the walls. She finds a poorly maintained garden. Wendell is disappointed at the lack of cultivation and inspects the different plants as Lift thinks. She talks about how people in Azir and Tashik love information and writing things down. Wendell says that Lift's tutors had said similar things in the palace and that he had gone to listen to their lectures in her place. Lift wonders what people do with what they write down afterwards, and Wendell says that if it were him, he'd keep it somewhere safe in case he needed it. Lift figured that the city would have something similar. She felt like the whole place was filled with Wendells. She figures that if somebody saw someone doing something strange, they'd have written it down. Lift sits down next to an old woman and tries to get information from her. She asks if there's a place in the city where people keep the things they write down to keep them safe. The woman asks if she's talking about the Grand Indicium and pointed to a massive mound-like bunker in the center of the city that towered over the rest. Has that always been there? Lift asked. Yes, Wendell said. Of course it has. Really? Lift scratched her head. Huh. And that's the end of chapter 11. We have two more chapters. Chapter 12. Lift climbs up Wendell to get to the top of one of the trench walls. She walked closer to the Grand Indicium, noting that everything in the city revolved around it. Wendell points out that the land slopes away from the central point, so they must have decided to make that spot a fortress. Lift finds it odd that they'd make a fortress for books. She sits down on the edge of the wall and points out that the building looks like a dick. Like somebody had a really small dick, and everyone felt sorry for him, so they made a huge statue to it so that it would look really big. Wendell sighs. That wasn't crude, Lift noted. That was being poetic. Old Whitehair said you can't be crass, as long as you're talking about art. Then you're being elegant. That's why it's okay to hang pictures of naked ladies in a palace. Mistress, wasn't this the man who got himself intentionally swallowed by a Marabethian Greyshell? Yup. Crazy as a box full of drunk minks, that one. I miss him. She liked to pretend he hadn't actually gotten eaten. He'd winked at her as he'd jumped into the Greyshell's gaping maw, shocking the crowd. That's Wit.
Wait, what?
Wit does not appear in this book, but the story she just told of a man that jumped into a Greyshell's mouth and got eaten by it is when she had met Wit in the past.
Oh. Fun.
Wit does say at the end of Words of Radiance when he's talking to Yasna that he once got swallowed by a Greyshell and was, like, digested. He lived inside of a Greyshell for a while, and Yasna was like, you're full of shit. it's funny now. Lift is like, yeah, no, I saw him do it. Wendell asks what their plan is, and she says that she's going to just do whatever comes to her. He asks her how they're going to find the information that they're looking for, and she says that Wendell is going to read all of it and find it. Wendell's like, hey, there's like hundreds of thousands of reports and ledgers in there, and like hundreds of thousands, just so you know, it is in fact larger than 10, since I know you can't count that high. Lyft offers him a soul in exchange for him reading it all, and he gets frustrated, saying that he doesn't eat souls, he isn't trying to haggle her, and he's just stating facts. Lyft tells him to calm down and that she hears him, that it's unavoidable with how much he whines. She says that they don't have the time to wait until night and sneak in. She grinned and then stood up. You're right. We gotta do this differently. Yes, indeed. We gotta be smart about it. Devious. Think like a void bringer. I didn't say, stop complaining. I'm gonna go steal some important looking clothes. And that's the end of chapter 12. Chapter 13, which is the last chapter we'll cover. Lyft puts on some Azish robes and walks into the Indicium. She tells one of the scribes that she's from the palace in Azir and is a friend of Emperor Gox. The scribe asks who she mugged to get the clothing, and Lyft tells her to just write to the palace with a span read so they can move on to the important stuff. The scribe asks for the names of the viziers in the palace that Lyft knows, and she lists them off with her insulting nicknames. Dalky, Big A, Daddy Sagbutt, and Fat Lips, who's in charge. The scribe tells her to wait there, and Lyft asks Wendell how she's doing. Terribly, Wendell said. Yeah, I noticed. It's almost as if it would have been useful to learn how to talk politely, like the viziers kept telling you. Lyft overheard the scribe talking to somebody outside who was telling them that they've sent for the guard captain since Lyft matches the description given to them. Lyft quickly goes over to the span reads and tells Wendell to find the one that leads to Azir since she can't read the labels. She activates the span read, which is answered immediately, and Wendell creates the shapes of the letters or the words that she wants to write so that she can trace them. This is Lyft, she wrote. Tell Fat Lips I need her. I'm in trouble. And somebody get Gox if he's not having his nose picked, right? The door opened and Lyft yelped. Beyond the door was a large gathering of people. 5 scribes and 3 guards. One was the woman who ran the guard post into the city. She ducked toward them. Careful, the guard shouted. She's slippery. Lyft made herself awesome, but the guard shoved the scribes into the room and started pushing the door shut behind her. Lyft got between their legs, slick and sliding easily, but slammed right into the door as it closed. She scuttled across the ground, but the room wasn't large. She tried to scramble around the perimeter, but the guard captain was right on her. Mistress, Wendell cried. Oh, mistress, don't get stabbed. Are you listening? Avoid getting hit by anything sharp or blunt, actually. Lyft growled as the other guard slipped in, then quickly shut the door. One prowled around on either side of the room. She dodged one way, then the other, then punched at the shelf with the span reeds, causing the scribe to scream as several toppled over. Lyft bolted for the door. The guard captain tackled her, and another piled on top of her. Lyft squirmed, making herself awesome, squeezing through their fingers. Tashi, a scribe whispered. God of gods and binder of the world. Lyft popped out of the grips of the guards, stepping up to stand on one of their backs, which gave her a good view of the desk. The span read was writing. Took them long enough, she said, then hopped off the guards and sat in the chair. The guards stood up behind her, cursing. Stop, captain, the scribe said. Go get another span read to the Azish palace. Get 2. We need confirmation. For what, the scribe said. The guard captain joined them, reading what the pen wrote. Then slowly, all 3 looked up at Lyft with wide eyes. To whom it may concern, Wendell read, it is decreed that I, Prime Akasix Yonagon, the first, Emperor of all Makabak, proclaim that the young woman known as Lyft is to be shown every courtesy and measure of respect. You will obey her as you would myself, and bill to the Imperial account any charges that might be incurred by her foray in your city. What follows is a description of the woman, and 2 questions only she can answer as proof of authentication. But know this, if she is harmed or impeded in any way, you will know Imperial wrath. Thanks, Gox, Lyft said. That means you gotta do what I say. And what is it you want? The scribe asked. Depends, Lyft said. What were you gonna have for lunch today? And that is where we will leave off for this week.
Good job, Lyft.
That's the first half. We're like halfway through. Actually, I think we're a little over halfway through Edge Dancer, but the ending is, obviously I had to pull a lot more directly from the book because it's the end. So, we're a little over halfway through Edge Dancer.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's not as painful as you thought it was going to be.
It's not, but I think it's mostly because we're skimming over most of the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm skimming a lot of it. Only really trying to hit the stuff that's important. How do you feel? You're starting to get introduced to the Heralds a little bit more than you have in the past, like with Nail. And I think that's something that's cool as we head into Oathbringer and Rhythm of War afterwards. is the heralds start to play a bigger role in the story.
So Nail believes that if the Radiants come back, then the Voidbringers will come back. So he finds any excuse under the law possible to kill them, even if it was decades ago.
Yes.
What's his face just teaches all the other heralds how to gaslight people.
Yep.
One of them is crazy and destroys all art of herself. One of them is crazy and keeps muttering to himself, except for when someone tries to attack him and then he blocks them. Are those all the ones we've seen so far? Like,
I think that you know of, yeah.
That we know of? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's some really interesting stuff going on with the heralds. We're starting to get more and more of them as we go. I'm trying to look and just make sure. Yeah, okay, you don't know that yet. Okay, I had to look up something about Nail. I didn't know if they had mentioned it in the epigraphs last book or if it gets mentioned later on.
I'm guessing it's later on.
It's later on. But it could have been included in, like, the epigraphs about the history of the Knights Radiant, so I wasn't sure if it was there, but it isn't. Yeah, next time, we're going to see a little bit more of Zeth. We're going to see a lot more of Nail, and we're going to find out what the deal is with that old man in the alleyway.
Is that one of the other people from Warbreaker?
It is not.
No.
This is a completely new thing that we're going to talk about a little bit after. When I said I was going back and picking up foreshadowing, I was talking about something related to that old man. And we'll talk about once we finish the book next week.
Because the slums and the court, like, district of palaces reminds me.
It's interesting. Yeah, that is interesting. He says some interesting stuff.
He's not one of those world travelers.
From Wave Kings?
Just in general.
I don't think he travels the worlds very often. I'm not sure if he ever has. He definitely hasn't in a very long time. Not sure if, I'm not sure if he was born on Roshar or not. But if he wasn't born on Roshar, it's been a very long time since he world traveled.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I could tell. All the weird people are from other worlds.
Yeah. And it's also kind of like, it's partly that, and it's also partly, if there's a random fucking character that I'm, like, reading every line of dialogue they have, it's kind of impossible for me to be like, no, Mango, they don't matter. I'm just reading every line of dialogue they have for no reason.
Because they're funny.
Like, yeah, they're funny. He matters. I'm not going to tell you how he matters until we finish the book next week, but he doesn't really matter a ton for Stormlight, but...
Is he one of those dragons? Of
him, he's not a dragon.
Is he similar to, like, Void?
No.
In any way?
He is something you have not experienced at all yet. And it'll be very cool when we get to it. But it's not so much super important. It's referenced indirectly a couple times throughout the rest of Stormlight, but Sanderson has said that what's going on with this guy is very important for the rest of the Cosmere.
What? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about it next time.
Don't like that.
You're gonna... They come back up. They come back up. They're referenced. Like, I'm not... This is never gonna... It's not that it's never gonna come back up, but I think this is the biggest role that something like this has.
It's kind of funny. The thing that people have with Nomura, when Nomura introduces new stuff that clearly is gonna be complicated, and people are like, that's gonna be something. Not sure how I feel about that. I'm fine with it when it's Nomura. But when it's Brandon Sanderson, that's exactly how I feel. And it's like, half of this stuff is already written, but I'm just like, okay. more stuff I have to remember.
I think once you see it all start to come together, it becomes more exciting than it does. Because right now I'm just throwing a bunch of stuff at you and I'm like, hey, this all matters, you know? But you don't, like, it doesn't really matter yet. And, like, as you see it start to interact with other things and you're like, oh, shit, this has a lot of implications for, like, other things. And it starts to get more exciting. But yes, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you guys are excited for the end of Edge Dancer next week. This isn't going to be a massive Sander Lanch like normal, because it's just a novella. But it's still a pretty exciting ending.
It's just facing off against a Herald. It's not.
It's just facing off against a Herald. Nothing exciting.
Not like she's going to kill him, because she won't.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, there ain't no way she's gonna fucking kill
him. Exactly. That's why I said she won't.
That's not, yeah. That's... And even if she did kill him, what would happen? He would go back to, go back to Braze.
I thought that they couldn't because they broke their oaths.
No, they can still get sent back if they die.
Is it because one of them didn't break their oath?
That they
can still be resurrected.
The Oath Pact is still in place, they just haven't, like, they're not abiding by it, really.
Okay, so as long as the Oath Pact is in place, they can be resurrected.
Presumably, yes.
Don't like that.
I still don't have all the details on the Oath Pact. I think Book 5 is gonna crack that bitch wide open.
Would it be... would their sanity be better if they did die and then come back?
I think,
or would it be worse for each time?
I think the sanity was something that was always going to happen to them because of the particular condition that they are experiencing. But if Honor was still around, he could have protected them from it.
Yeah. So it basically the situation they're in generally would always lead to them going insane, but if they still had a divine intervention,
yes,
it could have been avoided.
I think at least protected against,
but well, that fucking sucks. You weren't there to protect your god and now you did.
Yeah. I don't know that they could have done much against Odium killing Honor, if I'm being honest with you. Although we still really don't know how that happened, so
well,
I have theories.
Clearly, someone has to have the power to do something, or else what's the entire point of this series? Because we have to do something against Odium.
Yes, yes. Which actually has kind of been stated in the past. Honor in the Visions told Dalinar, hey, you can't beat him, but if you get him to appoint a champion, and you guys have a contest of champions, that would work. And we're going to get into exactly what a contest of champions would mean in Oathbringer.
What?
That they can beat Odium in this battle through a contest of champions.
So it's like, hey, appoint your best warrior, and if your warrior fails, then you just gotta go hide somewhere for all eternity.
You gotta abide by the term set. They're going to get more into the nature of shards and the kind of why a contest of champions would work. They're going to get into all of that in Oathbreaker. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Don't forget, we have a Discord server. The link to join that is in the episode description. We're on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. You can email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at Sean_AFK, and our juiced cover art was made by our good friend Alex at ALX_BigBoy. Link to follow them is in the episode description. As always, guys, thanks so much. Life before death. Strength before weakness, journey before destination.